From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of May, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. First things first, you need to visit our website at willag.org today. There are three articles, headlines, posted there related to soil and foliar herbicides and application under dry conditions from Aaron Hager. Three different articles. You want to look for them. They're at willag.org. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and trade for the week with Mike Zuzlo. He's at globalcomresearch.com. We'll hear from the Farm Doc team again. They're, of course, in Brazil. And we'll talk about the weather forecast and the word drought. That's right, drought, with Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien Ag Solutions on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, July corn for the day settled at 596.5. That was 7.5 higher. September at 537, up 7.5. And new crop December, 6.25 higher at 534.75. July soybeans, 18.75 cent the gain at $14.36.5. The August at 1373.5, 15 higher, and November at $12.80. Up 11.5 cents. Bean meal, $1.50 higher. The bean oil, $1.85 higher. Soft red winter wheat, July contract at $6.60.25, up 15.25. The hard red July at 8.33.34, and 0.75 cents higher for the day. Live cattle futures finished the lead at 161.92.5, up 35. Feeders at 221.42.5, $1.72.5 higher. And lean hogs for the day at $83.77.5, down $3.37.5. Crude oil at $71.44 a barrel, $2.89 higher. The gasoline price on the wholesale at $2.38.5 a gallon. They're a nickel and 0.9 cents higher. And diesel fuel at $2.31.9, up 0.8 cents for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now about 474 points higher at 33,669. Mike Zuzlo now joins us from globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Are you dry out there, Mike?
We have been very dry, and we got quite a bit warmer than what we'd been used to, Todd. We did get a little bit of rain this morning, maybe a little bit more coming this afternoon, but it seems as though you get west of Manhattan, get west of K-State, and it's super spotty, and more, I think, producers are probably calling their crop insurance adjusters and kind of throwing in the towel at this point if they didn't get rains last week. And so that's probably part of the calculus, part of the dynamic in this week's wheat-led recovery, hard red wheat-led recovery especially. But, you know, the big thing, I think, really did go back to the idea that we had taken prices down below over a dollar below, in the case of soft red wheat, where we really were before the Russia-Ukraine war started. And all of a sudden, the funds who have been so short, I suspect, woke up and said, we've got a war that looks worse than it did, and we don't have an extension on the Black Sea grain deal, and we've priced in both of those, and we've hit some major price targets. Let's go ahead and start buying back.
Yeah, so the war's still going on, but had settled out of the marketplace because the grain corridor had been opened. And this week it appears that the door is just slammed shut. And I guess the marketplace has said, well, if that's going to be the case, we need to take things higher. How much higher, I suppose, is really the question.
Yeah, and I think this goes back to, are they ready to integrate, they being the trade, ready to integrate the smaller crops coming out of Ukraine for both wheat and especially corn this year for 23-24, because that's been out there looming for months. You and I have talked about that. So to answer your question, I still think that we could fundamentally, if I'm correct about the U.S. all wheat yield being closer to 40 bushels than it is 49, I think the hard red wheat and the spring wheat planting delays could justify yet another dollar rally in the hard red wheat at this point. And then we see how things look at the end of May, early June, as we actually get ready to prepare for harvest.
Two things on the macro economy: the Federal Reserve raising the interest rate by a quarter point this week and suggesting we may or may not be done. At least they suggested both, I guess. And then the crude oil has not been in particularly good shape. It's not I mean, it's still high priced, but it has fallen back off.
No, you're right. And up until Friday, it had lost 10% just this week. And now we've been able to gain about 4%+ of that back just today. I would put part of that at the feet of the Federal Reserve, not just their actual policy, but the commentary that the Fed chairman gave. And he did illuminate to the market that the banking issue, the banking industry issue, was something they were watching. It could determine month by month their policy. And I think that was very necessary. And I think it was very wise and astute of them to do it that way, because we could have yet more large regional, essentially mid-sized banks go up for sale or have to be taken over. And that's something that's looming out there. And I think when I boil everything down to what we've seen so far this year, Todd, I can't get us out of the supply weather-driven market of 2022 at this stage of the game. We have moved away a little bit from a standpoint of monetary policy, finally, that they are kind of neutralizing themselves. But when you look at China and their economy, you look at the U.S.-China trade negotiations that have gone nowhere, you look at Brazil and China starting to settle trades and settle agriculture trades specifically in their own currencies, I think we are developing into what I was fearing, and that is the kind of seller of last choice at this point. So weather supply-driven markets mean hedge rallies.
And so you'll be looking to hedge what on what rallies?
Yeah, key point. The upside potential, I would say, on some of the commodity indices I follow would be anywhere from 7 to 11% would be my guess on grains, maybe 3 to 6% on oil seeds. I'm tampering down the oil seed rally potential just because of the size of the Brazil crop, and we know there are backlogs there. So if we can get upwards of 585 in Dease corn, and we should be able to shoot towards a six area, that would be a place to, I think, start getting some paper hedges in place. I'm really still stuck in the mindset, and I think this year's shown it to be accurate, that I'd rather do paper positions than cash positions if I'm hedging for downside risk exposure.
Anything else before I let you go?
Big thing to watch is the cattle market. I think, you know, we came off those big highs and we've gapped lower. It's time for the charts to find some support here and maybe try and fill the gap. But, you know, the cycle high is out there looming somewhere.
Thank you much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Mike Zuzlow. He is with GlobalComResearch.com. This week, we've been following the progress of the FarmDoc team as they've made their way through parts of Brazil. Next week, we'll do the same thing. Nick Paulson is part of that team, and he has been talking with the university folks, some others, about the way extension programming has been delivered through the FarmDoc website, digital first, rather than boots on the ground, though there is some of that as well. I asked him how that's been received at the university level in Brazil, where they collect a lot of data related to pricing structure and logistics. He said they were really interested.
And, you know, as we sort of described what the FarmDoc project does, particularly our relationship with Illinois Farm Business Farm Management, we realize that there's a lot of similarities in terms of, you know, the information that they're trying to provide. Improve the transparency and availability of information related to both logistics data and then also price and cost of production data, very similar to, you know, the work that you know Gary Schnicke does on the FarmDoc team in putting together crop budgets, as well as other information to sort of spread the word about, you know, what production practices are like, what cost of production are, what returns are, what farm incomes are throughout the state of Illinois.
So Nick Paulson says the FarmDoc team identified some similarities that they're likely to follow up on.
Because I think there are some opportunities to potentially collaborate, you know, maybe share our information with them and vice versa, and maybe put out some good material that does some really good data-driven comparisons between production in Illinois for corn and soybeans, and then you know, similar types of summaries for production of both of those crops in some of the major regions in Brazil.
Nick Paulson says he told both the academics at the university level and those that were attending the Agri Show that the land grant system in the United States provided the basis for content which was delivered through Extension, and that the FarmDoc model was a unique experience within Extension.
And then talks about how the FarmDoc project has sort of changed that model in terms of using the internet as the dissemination mechanism. So the state specialists, the faculty members on campus, you know, directly providing that content via digital means on the internet to the stakeholders directly, while still keeping some of that, again, boots on the ground, in-person presence with a lot of the in-person meetings that we do. And I felt like that resonated with the group. They were pretty impressed with some of the usage statistics that we have from the websites. And then we spent quite a bit of time also talking about sort of how we've shifted into not only doing, you know, more traditional types of extension publications online through articles and decision tools, but how we've taken some of that more to video content, creating, you know, obviously the archived versions of the webinars, doing the webinars and offering those live as an alternative to in-person meetings. But then also creating some of the shorter videos and the growth that we've generated in the YouTube channel with the 5-minute farm docs, and how we've seen sort of that broaden the audience, and people who maybe see the video content as kind of a teaser almost to the more in-depth analysis that they can go to in the articles, and driving traffic back from those videos to the articles. Again, that seemed to resonate a lot with the group. Some questions about how that worked. I think, you know, pretty impressed with the audience we've developed both in the U.S. And internationally.
By the way, representatives of the University of Sao Paulo have visited the FarmDoc team right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. That trust-building process should make for a very good exchange of ideas and information over time. Let's check the weather forecast today with Eric Snodgrass. He's from Nutrient Ag Solutions. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again.
Well, it's a beautiful day. Looks like it's going to be several really nice days. Some rainfall in a few places. Can you tell me what the forecast looks like over the next several days?
Yeah, it's good to be breaking away from what we were at the last 10 days of April, which is actually parts of Illinois atop 10 coldest finish to April on record. So it's nice just to see some warmth finally getting in here now that we're 5 days into the month of May. So the issue that we have right now is that we are a bit dry, right? So we've had some places that have missed out on some recent rains. I know we look out and you see the grass is green, but I think a lot of folks out in fields just, you know, find as we're working the soil that things are dry. In fact, we had that terrible accident down there on Interstate 55, which is some of the dust. And that dust is just indicative of these drier soils. So the rain over the next 10 days is absolutely critical. And the problem is, it's not exactly coming in everywhere. You know, we had these big systems that rolled through and brought in long fronts that delivered plenty of moisture earlier in the season. And now we're kind of going into that summer convective mode, right? Where you have a lot of isolated, scattered thunderstorm complexes. Some people get the rain and others do not, which means a lot of people are going to hate the app on their phone over the next several weeks as they look down and see these probabilities of rain, but then end up missing. And so I'm concerned. I'm a little concerned that we're a little bit too dry here in the month of May. And I hope that the models outperform themselves and end up bringing in decent moisture, because you just don't want to go into, you know, June, July, August with any sort of deficit. Good news is, though, we're picking up a lot of heat. We'll probably, I don't know, maybe have 120 GDDs in the next 7 days in some places, which means if you got a crop in yesterday, we could see emergence as early as, you know, the end of next week, which would be incredible just to see that heat finally getting into the soil. But I think my focus is just going to be on the fact that we just showed back up on the drought monitor, and I don't like seeing that.
Hey, wait, we showed back up on the drought monitor?
Yeah, we are now in the abnormally dry category, and we need to get right back out of that and show ourselves back on the better side of the balance sheet.
How much of the state or the Midwest is in the drought monitor?
It's a lot of western and central Illinois, and it kind of goes into parts of southern Iowa, a little bit into northern Illinois, a big chunk of Missouri. And of course, the drought's still anchored out in the plains, but you know, just to see it kind of working its way toward us, I don't like. And now that we're going into that more scattered storm type of a setup. And yeah, we do have the risk for some stronger storms. We're going to be very reliant on getting hit by some of these good systems in order to just take us off that risk area for drought going forward.
Oh, that's just what the crop needs, more stress. It's been in the ground, or part of it's been in the ground for 3 weeks and just about to emerge, and then it might have to go hunting for some subsoil moisture levels. Are those okay?
Well, they did recover over what we had last fall, but they're not where I'd like them to be. You know, I like to see volumetric soil moisture approaching 40%. That's usually a pretty good target number. And that would mean you've got enough, you know, in reserve to kind of last maybe 3 to 4 weeks without much precipitation. You know, some parts of the state are down there in the 10 to 25% range. So we need to get those numbers up. And that means this early May precipitation needs to come in. And we just need it to outperform. We need the atmosphere to outdo what we're forecasting it to do.
What does the summer look like in your opinion?
Well, you know, I've had this tune I've been singing with you every Friday for since December that, you know, El Nino's coming on, and right now it's coming on relatively quickly, and we do see, you know, that it's actually outpacing what the models had forecast. But I can't get over the fact there's still cold water on the West Coast, and we've been talking about how that's a competing factor for our summer precipitation. So at this stage, right now, I still think that El Nino will win this battle. I still think we're going to see moisture working its way in here. It's going to come in a variety of thunderstorms off a northwest flow. But I just can't take the risk off the table fully yet that we couldn't see some regional drought developing in summer and at times get some episodes of heat. So just thinking about all of that, you know, it's one of those things where I don't want to pull the trigger already and say, hey, this crop looks like it's going to be in great shape. But I'll tell you, May is going to be critical. So what we need to watch is ocean temperatures off the West Coast. The faster they warm up, the better shape we're going to be in for this summer.
Anything else we ought to take up?
Yeah, right now we're still seeing a lot of heat in the Iberian Peninsula, so Spain and Portugal. Northern Africa is very hot. Central Europe is wet. It's cold over in Ukraine, so they're having a cold spring right now. You go elsewhere around the world, South America, the monsoon's slowing down in a big way. It's normal for it to do that. Some of the late planted safrina, though, that's in parts of South Central Brazil, needed more rain than this. I don't think it's going to be a major impact on total productivity, but it's certainly going to keep them away from the really, really top-end yield and production that they could have gotten out of this safrina crop. It'll still be big, but just not as big as I think it could have possibly been. There's quite a few things happening internationally as the world transitions away from what we've been in for 3 years to now this, hopefully, El Nino-dominant pattern.
Hey, thank you much.
Yeah, you bet.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agribull joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online at willag.org, willag.org.